Remember, this is kind of an extension of prayer, but we're going to look at Daniel, and Daniel was a man of prayer, as also were Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. And we went through chapter 1 and then chapter 2, and remember, we saw how Daniel was a young man, maybe in his anywhere from his early mid-teens to as old as 20. Nobody knows for sure. And these guys were taken from their homeland and brought to Babylon to be educated and to serve in the administration of the government of Nebuchadnezzar. So they did that, and then Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. We read about it in chapter 2, and all the wise men and the astrologers and the whatever the other guys were, Chaldeans and so on, they couldn't interpret the dream. They couldn't even tell him what the dream was. So then Daniel says, I can tell you. So we're going to go back to verse 28.
What chapter?
Chapter 2. Chapter 2. We're going to go through some of this with some of the details of it. And it says in chapter 2, verse 28, but there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. And then he goes in and tells him the dream. But I wanted to point out the term the latter days. The latter days shows up in different places in the Old Testament. And it refers to an announcement of something that will occur in the future. Doesn't mean in the end times, it doesn't mean in the last days, it just means in the future. So if you hold your place here and go to Deuteronomy 4, it occurs. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 29. It says, Moses talking, but if from thence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, thou shalt find him. And if thou seek him with all thy heart and with all thy soul, when thou art in tribulation, all these things are come upon thee. Even in the latter days, if thou turn to the Lord thy God and shall be obedient unto his voice, for the Lord thy God is a merciful God, and he will not forsake thee, neither destroy thee, nor forget the covenant of thy fathers, which he spake unto them. So this, he's speaking about, you know, in the future, if they turn their back, they'll get screwed up. But if they turn back to God, he will hear them and they'll be able to come back to him. So back to Daniel. So the latter days, when you see that, it means just simply the future. Verse 29. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts come into thy mind upon thy bed. What should come to pass hereafter? And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, the secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. So this is pretty cool because Daniel doesn't say, you know, it's me and it's all about what I can do. He's saying, you know, this is God and he's revealing it. It's not to promote me or glorify me or anything. Verse 31, thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, and stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible, or awesome. And the NIV says, a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. So this thing was in his dream. The image's head was of fine gold, or pure gold. His breast and his arms of silver. His belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part iron and part clay. So it describes these parts here. Five parts, right? The head made out of fine gold, then the breast and arms silver, then the belly and thighs brass, legs of iron, then the feet part iron and part clay. And these are in descending order. At the top was gold, the most precious and the most dense. The second is silver, also precious, but less valued and less dense. The third is brass, which is semi-precious. It's a mixture of copper and tin, or, you know, it's an alloy of different things throughout history. And then finally, the fourth was iron, strong, but not precious at all, and less dense. And finally, clay, the most common, least valuable, and lightest. And as you go down, as you go down, each one of them is a little bit stronger, though. So, for instance, gold is kind of soft. You know, if you ever see a movie, sometimes you'll see if it's real gold, they'll bite into it, because you can bite into gold and make a dent. I had a gold watch band once, and it was terrible because it just got all, it didn't hold up. Anyway, so silver. And then brass was used for all kinds of tools and weapons and things like that. So the silver is stronger than gold, and then brass is stronger than silver, and then, of course, iron is stronger than all of them. So, so that was that. So then it says, in verse 34, thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and break them to pieces. A stone was cut out of without hands. Without hands is an idiomatic expression meaning no human involvement, but rather an act of God alone. That's what it means. So if you hold your place here and we go to Lamentations 4, so right after Jeremiah, Lamentations 4 and verse 6, says, for the punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people is greater than the punishment of the sin of Sodom, that was overthrown as in a moment, and no hand stayed on her. You know, what happened to Sodom? It just, you know, the fire came down from heaven and destroyed it. Let's go to Acts chapter 7. Acts chapter 7 and verse 48. Howbeit, the Most High dwelleth not in temples made with hands, as saith the prophet. We've read that many times, right? In as opposed to the temples that men make with hands, with stones, and they build. And but God said, even when David was saying, you know, do you want me to build a temple? He says, well, I live in a temple not made of hands. You know, the earth is my footstool. In chapter 17, chapter 17 and verse 24, it says, God that made the world and all the things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. So where it says without hands or not made with hands, it's referring to what God does. It says another place that we have the circumcision made without hands, right? So let's go back to Daniel. So, a stone cut out without hands, which smote the image upon the feet that were iron and clay and break them in pieces. And the stone, what does the stone refer to? Well, as we go through this, the four parts of the statue or the image refer to the four great empires. The first, the head of gold, which we see as we read along in the context, is Nebuchadnezzar and the Empire of Babylon, or Babylonia. The next one is the silver, and that's the chest and the arms, and that's the Medo-Persian Empire. You know, we read about Darius the Mede and Cyrus the Persian, which it was a... The Median Empire was an older empire, and then I believe through marriage, they became one empire. Because Darius was related to Cyrus somehow or another. Okay? So the stone, the next one is the brass of the legs, right? And that's the Greek Empire. That's Alexander the Great. And then the iron and the, what was that? The iron is the legs, and then it goes down to the feet. And that's the Roman Empire. And so that's what that is. But the stone, and it talks about it here, then was the iron, the clay, and the brass, the silver, the gold, broken to pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. And that refers to the millennium kingdom of the Christ. So if we go to Psalm 118, and verse 22. The stone which the builders refused is become the head of the stone of the corner. This is the Lord's doing. It is marvelous in our eyes. And then in Acts chapter 4. Acts chapter 4 and verse 10. It says, "Be it known unto you all and to all the people of Israel that by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom ye crucified, whom God raised from the dead, even by him doth this man stand here before you whole. This is the stone which was set at naught of you builders, which has become the head of the corner." And then we go to 1 Peter chapter 2. You guys have all heard this stuff before, but it's really cool to see in light of what this is talking about here. And chapter 2, verse 3, it says, "If so be ye have tasted that the Lord is gracious, to whom coming as unto a living stone, disallowed indeed of men, but chosen of God and precious. Ye also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. Wherefore also it is contained in the scripture, Behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he that believeth on him shall not be confounded. Unto you, therefore, which believe, he is precious. But unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner. And a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word being disobedient, whereunto also they were appointed." So, it's referring to Jesus Christ. And I wanted to go to one more. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. It says, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." So he's referred to through the Old Testament as a rock. Back to Daniel. So we have these four great kingdoms or four great empires, and they are destroyed by this rock, which is cut out of the mountain or is cut out with hands. Doesn't say where it's cut out of, but it's all figurative, and it destroys the other kingdoms. It smashes them to dust. I thought about that, and I thought about when Moses came down from the mountain and they had the golden calf, and he broke it up and smashed it into dust and threw it into the stream or the river, whatever it was there. So basically the elements were beaten into dust. These five parts of the body and these five elements represent the five great kingdoms or empires of the earth. It's going to make it more plain as we go on in the context later in Daniel, but I thought I'd put that there for you so you'd remember it. Then it says in verse 36, "This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king." And I thought it was interesting here that Daniel said, "We will." And I'm not sure what that means. It could mean him and God. Maybe Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego were with him. I don't know. But he says, "We will." He says, "We will tell the interpretation thereof before the king." This is the dream. Okay. "Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom of power and strength and of glory." So Daniel tells the king exactly, he's told him what the dream was, which nobody else could tell him, and now he gives him the interpretation. And he says, it's God that gave you the kingdom. It's God that gave you the power. It's God that gave you the strength and the glory. The greatest kingdom in the world at this time was to Nebuchadnezzar, and God was the one that put him there, and God's the one that gave it to him. Now, at this point in time, there is no more there is no more kingdom of Israel. There's no more kingdom of Judah. And from this point on, there's never again a king of Israel. So then your mind races ahead to the Gospels and you say, well, what about Herod? Well, he wasn't a legitimate king of Israel because he wasn't an Israelite. He was appointed by Caesar. He was put in there and given that as a present or a gift because he helped Caesar. So he wasn't a legitimate king of Israel. There was never again a king of Israel. And so this time forward is called the times of the Gentiles. It's the ruling of the Gentiles. You know, before this, the whole Old Testament revolved around, in the beginning, it revolved around certain men that believed God, right? It was Noah, and then Abraham, and then Isaac and Jacob, And then Jacob had the 12 sons, and it was the nation of Israel. And then everything revolved around Israel. And as long as other countries let Israel alone, God didn't mess with them. He didn't bother them. But if they messed with Israel and Israel was standing for God, then those countries paid a price. When Israel didn't listen to God, then they paid a price. But it all revolved around Israel. You know, there is no biblical record of any other great kingdoms, although there were other great kingdoms around the world, right? There were the Aztec kingdom and the Incan kingdoms and the different great dynasties of the Chinese. There was all kinds of stuff, but none of them are mentioned in the Bible. There was even in Africa, the Zulu Empire. You know, there were other empires, but they're not important. They're not important. And these four that are mentioned here are important only because they have to do with Israel in some way, and you know, God recognizes it as part of the history of this area of the world, and this is the center of what happened because this is where the Christ came. So now, the head was made of gold, and there was only one king, and he was an absolute king. What he said was the absolute law. Okay? When we get to the Mede-Persian kingdom, they were a little different. They still had kings, but they also had laws. And the king had to obey and keep to the laws. And we're going to see that with later on with the lion's den. But there, the arms, right? The two arms. There were two parts to the Mede-Persian Empire, two parts to it. Then you had the Greek Empire, and that was Alexander the Great, very short-lived, but he conquered even the Persians and most of the eastern end of the Mediterranean, and then he got killed or died. And then his kingdom got split up among his generals, and then the Romans came in. Now, the Romans are the legs, right? The iron. And there were two parts of the Roman Empire, not in the beginning, but later on, it split up into east and west. That's the two legs. And then you have the feet, and it's mixed with iron and clay, and then the Roman Empire eventually split up into numerous small kingdoms. They tried to hold it together. If you read the history of Middle Age Europe and the Middle East, you know, what was the Roman Empire became hundreds of little kingdoms. So, anyway, so that's kind of the history of it. So, verse 38, did we get that far? Yeah, verse 38, and wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of heaven hath given into thine hand, and hath made thee a ruler over them all, thou art the head of gold. So God gave everything to Nebuchadnezzar to rule over. He made him the ruler. You know, it's kind of interesting. He says, I've given you the rule over the children of men, the beasts of the field, the fowls of heaven, hath he given unto thine hand, and hath made thee a ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. You know, it kind of reminded me a little bit when I read it of how God made Adam the ruler over the whole creation in the beginning, you know, over the fowls of the air and the fish of the sea and everything else. He didn't go that far with Nebuchadnezzar, but it's figurative, but it means he gave him absolute power. He gave him rule over everything. And this Babylon was foretold in, and we looked at that last week, in Jeremiah, I believe. And the gold head represented the first kingdom, Babylon. Verse 39. And after all these shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. You know, iron could dent or break gold or silver or brass, right? It's stronger than all those. So, verse 40. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, for as much as iron break. Okay. Verse 41. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of the potter's clay and part iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. So, you know, that Roman Empire was be mixed, the iron and the clay, and eventually it would break apart. Okay, verse 41. Is that 42? 43. No, I didn't get to 43. 42. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part clay, so kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken, which is kind of what happened. It broke up. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. So this kind of tells you that these small kingdoms, they won't stay together. They won't hold together. You know, and again, that's what happened with the Roman Empire. It broke up into small kingdoms, and then they broke out in wars between themselves. Some of them got stronger and some of them got weaker. And it, you know, it was an ebb and flow, and they changed, and the political map changed, and countries came and went. So the time between 43 and 44 represent or includes the period of grace through the gathering. Okay? In other words, we talk about the mystery. Why was it a mystery? Because it wasn't known, right? Well, and so here in Daniel, it wasn't known either. He couldn't tell what happened between the fall of these empires and the Old Testament and what was coming at the end time. But he just foretold of this stone that was going to break all these empires and crush them. So it says in verse 44, and in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Right? And that's what he promised, right? He promised David that he would have somebody to sit on his throne forever. And he promised, and Jesus Christ was promised, that he would sit on the throne forever. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So we go from verse 43, where it's talking about the breakup of the Roman Empire, and we go all the way to the millennial kingdom of Jesus Christ when he comes back, not for the first time to gather his church, but he comes back the second time to rule on earth. And it's the kingdom that he rules on earth. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, you know, by God, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Because why? Because God gave it, right? What God says is, what he says will be. And Daniel is speaking by revelation. He has the Spirit of God in him, and God's given him this information. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face. That must have hurt. and worshiped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. Oblation is, you know, a gift. It's a nice gift. I was going to read you a couple of verses. Let's, before we go any further. Hosea, which is the next book over. Chapter 3. 4 and 5. It says, the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, and without a prince, and without a sacrifice, and without an image, and without an ephod, and without a teraphim. Afterward shall the children of Israel return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. In the latter days, in the future. You know. And then in Luke 21, this is an interesting one because people always use this and take it out of context and screw it up. So we don't want to do that. Chapter 21, verse 24, it says, and they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and they shall be led away captive unto all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So what happened? Well, once the Babylonian captivity happened, Jerusalem was destroyed. Then they came back. They tried to build it up, but it didn't last very long. Then the Romans came in. And then in 70 AD, the temple was destroyed and Jerusalem was pretty much forgotten about for 1,000 years. You know, and even today, it's not attained what it had. Right? It's just, it's there, it's a historical site and a religious site, but it has none of what it had in the time of Israel, because in the time of Israel, it was where the temple of God was, it was where the high priest was, and that's all gone. And so it says that Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. And the time of the Gentiles will be fulfilled, you know, in the future. Back to Daniel, chapter 2. We're up to what? Verse 47. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth it is that your God is the God of gods, and a Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. So he's over everybody except for Nebuchadnezzar, kind of like Joseph in Egypt. And Daniel requested the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. And that means that, it doesn't mean he sat at the front gate of Babylon. It means he was the chief counselor for the king. You know, everybody came through him. He was the guy that decided who saw the king, who didn't, what went on. So, the dream of Nebuchadnezzar was interpreted by Daniel and is a prophecy of the future. It speaks of the ascension of the Gentile kingdoms, their succession, and their final destruction. Later, we'll come back to look at these empires, kingdoms, to give a fuller explanation of their ways and their kings. Remember also, as we go through this, that Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego and Daniel had previously prayed together, right? And God had saved them. So now as we go into chapter 3, we get into a whole new subject, which is what we're going to look at. So from what we understand, this chapter occurs approximately 23 years after. 23 years have gone by. Okay? So whatever, you know, these guys were, they were young teenagers. Now they're, you know, facing 40. You know, on the downside of the 30s or 40 years old. And Daniel is not mentioned in chapter 3, which is very interesting. So we don't know where he is or what he did or what he was doing. But we'll read and we'll read on. We still have time. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 70 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. So 23 years goes by, and Nebuchadnezzar decides to make this statue of gold. Now, most theologians and people think that it was an image of him or something, but it doesn't say that, number one. Number two, it's out of proportion for it to be an image of a person. Right? Unless he was Manute Bol. Mm-hmm. You remember Manute Bol? He was the tall, skinny basketball. Okay. You know, nobody is 1/10 their height and width, right? You know, you'd be ridiculously thin. So the height was 70 cubits, which is about 90 feet tall. And 6 cubits wide is about 9 feet wide, which is pretty big. It says it's of gold, but it does not say that it's solid gold. You know, most sculptures or statues are not usually solid. Statue of Liberty is hollow, right? Most brass statues or sculptures are hollow on the inside. They have some kind of framework on the inside, and then they put the metal on the outside. So, but even having said that, a gold statue 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide would have been extremely valuable, even if it was just gold-plated. That's a lot of gold, and it would be awful heavy. So, and he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. So it was outside the city about 12 miles south of Babylon because he wanted people to see it. If it was in Babylon, it would have been dwarfed by the buildings and the walls and the palaces and the hanging gardens and all the stuff that was there. So he put it out where it would stand out in the plain. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent together to gather together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. So you wonder, why did he do this? Doesn't tell us in the word particularly, but throughout history, And one of the great examples would be Constantine of the Roman Empire. The reason he made Christianity the religion of the empire was to bring unity to the empire. If everybody has the same religion, it's a point of unity. So he decides to build this golden image, icon, whatever it is, and he's going to dedicate it. And a dedication is usually what? A pretty ornate, maybe solemn and, fancy affair. And he invites all these guys, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the councils, the sheriffs, all the magistrates, all the municipal leaders, everybody throughout the kingdom. Then the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the councilors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the herald cried aloud, To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages. So here, you know, he's saying peoples, you know, different groups, different tribes, different peoples, different nations, ethnos, and different languages. He's because it's a big, diverse kingdom. And so they all had their own little religions. They had all their own little cultures. And so Nebuchadnezzar has brought them all under his rulership and kingship. And now he wants to unite them. He wants to get them thinking the same thing. He's a smart guy. And so the herald comes. The herald is the guy, the town crier, right? The guy that announces the decree. That at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a fire, burning fiery furnace. Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Well, you could imagine, right? It's worship this or else, and you become toast. Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. The Chaldeans, again, were the kind of the elite of the Babylonian Empire. And they spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, and the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of the fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They have not served thy gods nor worshiped the golden image which thou hast set up. You know, it's pretty interesting. They, when they go to make this accusation, the first thing they do is they flatter the king. Mm-hmm. Oh, king, live forever. And then they remind him of what he said. They remind him, they quote the law. And he's absolute. His law, his word is absolute. So, and he says, they say in verse 12, there are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. You know, they were high-ranking officials. Now, you could imagine these guys were Jews, and the Chaldeans are under them. So they probably had some jealousy working. Mm-hmm. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They haven't regarded thee. They ignored your law. And they served not thy gods, nor worshiped the golden image which thou hast set up. They haven't worshiped your gods, and now they're not worshiping the golden image which you set up. Now, if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute... Okay, I skipped over. Then Nebuchadnezzar, verse 13, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? See, he's not taking their word for it. He's asking them. He's saying, you know, you guys, I elevated you to important positions and I've trusted you and you're not doing what I ask? Now, if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. We are not careful. It's not necessary for us to defend ourselves. We're not worried about this. We're not dancing around with any excuses. This is it. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. You know, our God's able to rescue us. He's able to save us. And he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. But if he doesn't, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. So that what they say, we're not going to do that. We believe God will save us, but if he doesn't, it doesn't matter. We're not serving your God. We're not bowing. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded they should heat the furnace one seven times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in the army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, their hats, and other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace was exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The guys that tied them up and took them and threw them in the furnace died from the heat of the furnace coming out of the door. You know, it's like when you open an oven, you've been cooking something, and you get that blast of heat. You know, could you imagine? It was so hot, these guys died. Verse 22, therefore, because the king commands was unexplained, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was astonied, or astonished, and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Okay, so that's an interesting thing, the Son of God. Later on, skip the page. Later on, it's going to tell us that it was an angel in chapter, verse 28. But anyway, I had some verses. But anyway, you know, angels have been referred to as sons of God, right? And we who have the Spirit of God are considered sons of God. So, if it was an angel, he could be called a son of God. I think in the NIV, it says one of the sons of gods, small g. So, but at any rate, then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come thither. He changes tune really quick. You know, it's kind of interesting. 20 years before, he had acknowledged the true king, the true God, when Daniel told him and interpreted his dream. And now, you know, he builds this golden image, and he expects everybody to worship it. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth out of the midst of the fire. And the princes and the governors and the captains and the king's counselors being gathered together saw these men, upon whose body the fire had no power, nor was a hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor smell of fire had passed on them. So they didn't smell a fire. Their coats weren't damaged. Their hair wasn't damaged. Nothing. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel," "his messenger, and delivered," or rescued, "his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God." So then, when he saw what they did, he had respect for them. He respected them for the stand they took and the deliverance they received from God. And it glorified who?
God.
It glorified God. It didn't glorify... Oh my gosh, Stella. So, let's see. "Therefore, I make a decree," verse 29, "that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sought." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So, now we don't know why Daniel wasn't there. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing. Maybe he was sent on a official trip, or maybe he was, I don't know, sick or something. God protected him or kept him out of this. I don't know. But he wasn't there. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were there. And they were also men of prayer, weren't they? We remember they got together with Daniel when they interpreted the first dream, and they prayed together, and that saved their lives, you know? So here again, they stood for God's word, and they were delivered. And that's where we're going to stop tonight, and then next week we get to chapter 4. Oh, next week, 2 weeks. Next week, we're not going to have this. I have to be with my son as he's moving. But the following week after, we'll pick it up in chapter 4. Okay? So, Father God, we thank you for this night. We thank you for blessing us and loving us and keeping us safe. We thank you for what a great God you are and what a great word you've given us to show us the greatness and the how wonderful a God you are. You are a God of deliverance. You are a God that takes care of your people as they look to you. And we thank you in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.